scholarly articles have been written on it. Seminars are offered on how to avoid it. And we have all experienced it at some point in our work lives or family lives or just the day-to-day grind of being human. Burnout is described as a physical or mental collapse caused by overwork or stress. I want you to help me out here. As we have all likely faced some form of burnout, what are some ways that you have combated burnout in your lives over the years? What are some coping mechanisms for burnout?
Vacation.
Gardening.
Spending time in nature.
Changing jobs.
Changing jobs.
Exercise.
Exercise.
Find one thing to focus on.
Finding Sabbath and finding one thing to focus on.
Water.
Water. Mm-hmm. Doing lists.
Keeping Sabbath.
Keeping Sabbath. Do that.
Elaborate.
Elaborate.
Alone time.
Learning to say no.
Taking naps.
Yes. Now, here's a slightly more nuanced question. We all have work or lives that can be very busy and stressful, and yet we get through them okay, even with joy sometimes. What is it about something in our work or in our life or in the day-to-day grind that makes difficult tasks worth doing? How can we do difficult things without burning out?
Faith.
Knowing a purpose.
Knowing a purpose.
Prayer.
Envisioning the end. Keeping balance.
Having a support system.
Having friends. Having a support system.
Having a partner.
Having a partner. Family.
Humor.
Yeah.
Receiving thanks.
Music and receiving thanks.
Watching others grow.
Yeah.
Asking the Spirit for help. Taking it one day at a time. Not a full task. Just start.
Yeah, taking it one day at a time. I remember taking 30 kids on a whitewater rafting trip in Millinocket, Maine, half of which were Germans and spoke some English, not always English, and being very stressed out about this whitewater rafting trip. One, because I was in charge of 30 kids, but two, because I hate whitewater rafting. And I had my watch on the whole time, and I knew that it was a four-hour trip. So I would look at my watch every once in a while and say, okay, only 3 hours to go. Okay, only 2.5 more hours to go. Only 1.5 more hours to go. And that got me through the trip, and we ended up having a great time. But like knowing that there's an end to something definitely is one of the things. The passage that we have here, that Renata graciously read impromptu, very well, I might say, requires a little bit of context. Chapter 6 in Mark, there's a lot happening. Jesus goes back to his hometown where he's not warmly greeted. And that's where we get the saying, a prophet is of no use in his hometown. Jesus then sends out the 12 disciples in pairs to go out into the countryside to preach good news and to help troubled people. And he tells them not to carry a second cloak or bags of food or anything like that, but rely on the hospitality of others, which I imagine trying to do that today, how stressful it would be to just decide to go without provisions, like your credit card, or your cell phone, or your wallet. In the meantime, there's a story about the death of John the Baptist. Herod Antipas is having this lavish party for himself, and one thing leads to another, and out of drunken whimsy, they end up killing John the Baptist, who has been in prison for some time. So in our passage today, the disciples have returned from going out into the villages without their credit cards and cell phones and wallets. And so the story of John the Baptist has been shared among themselves, which is harrowing because this is Jesus' cousin who has been killed. But also many scholars think that many of the early disciples of Jesus were first followers of John the Baptist. When John was put in prison, they started following Jesus. So many of these disciples could have known this person very well. So travel plus loss plus all of this news, because the disciples came back encouraged. They wanted to tell Jesus what all had happened. Jesus decides that they need to get away, because it says they hadn't even had time, the leisure, to eat a meal. They were so busy. So they get in a boat, and they try getting out to the wilderness. Like, they go on retreat, or they go camping, or whatever. I don't think camping was a thing in the first century, but I'm trying to make it more good for us. But the people on the shore see the boat, and they run around the shore, watching the boat, and they see where it lands, and they're all waiting there on the shore for Jesus. And it says that Jesus has compassion on these people because they are like sheep without a shepherd. A few weeks ago, we had Good Shepherd Sunday. Some people call this Shepherdless Sunday for that very reason, that verse. They are like sheep without a shepherd. Our passage, unfortunately, skips a section, the feeding of the 5,000. I think that happens because in a couple of weeks we'll have the same story told by John. That's why the people who picked the lectionary decided that. And we'll get to why I think we should have that story in there in a second. But it says in our passage that Jesus began teaching right away, and folks came and they were healed and they were blessed. And the troubled were helped as well. Throughout Israel's history, kings have been associated with the image of shepherd. Well, this wasn't always the case around the Middle East during that time. In Israel, shepherds was the image of the king, someone who took care of the people. In Assyria, it was a bit different. The kings are often depicted as hunters. So they were seen as more warlike and pushing out boundaries to create wealth for a civilization. Shepherds, though, have a very different job. They care for animals, particularly sheep. Shepherds, in Jesus' time, were not considered to be wealthy people. They were not the land owners. They were not even the sheep owners. They were often the youngest son, like King David that we read about in the Hebrew Bible. Or they were more likely hired hands. And your welfare as a shepherd was tied directly to the welfare of your sheep. If one of your sheep that was under your charge died or was lost, you could be out of a job or worse. That idea of being deeply tied to the sheep was important for how Israel thought about kingship, especially, and its leaders. That its leaders are tied directly to the people that they care for. And here, I think the Gospel of Mark, the writer, tells this story about this whimsical feast in which John the Baptist is killed for no reason, were at a lavish party to contrast what Jesus is offering. Jesus is making a political statement here. He's saying that Herod Antipas is not a good shepherd. Not a good shepherd of the people. Despite the need to get away and recharge, Jesus and his disciples were moved by compassion for the people of the land. The shepherd, the ruling class, had abandoned the people, and as such, Jesus' condemnation is deeply political. The people who have power are abusing their power and harming people, even killing those people that are trying to help. The work, the teaching, the healing, the helping of the troubled, and the feeding miracles confront the politics of Jesus' day, not through partisanship or protest, but by casting a different vision. One based on the compassion of all people and the work to return to wholeness to individuals who have been lost or who have been abused by society. Now, our faith is inherently political because our lives are inherently political. And often, no matter which party holds power in office in Washington, people are harmed by bad policy, corruption, or scandals. Changes in power from one party to another are often jarring, with a great deal of time spent blaming previous administrations for all the ills that our nation faces. Further, our leaders can be rather self-serving, taking credit for the work of others, making decisions on whimsy, and leading our country into yet more armed conflict in the name of American interests. And there are times, difficult times, when religious leaders are called to speak prophetically, to call out the ways our leaders are harming people, destroying confidence in democracy, or corrupting our moral character as a nation. Some religious leaders are more comfortable in this prophetic role than others. Most, I find, have difficulty with this. But unfortunately, I think that some religious leaders think that speaking prophetically or speaking truth to power ends in the condemnation. I would argue here, though, that Jesus is offering something different. For he goes far more than rail against the political powers of his day. He offers a prophetic statement here. Herod is no shepherd, no leader in the tradition of Israel's great leaders. But he doesn't stop there. He doesn't stop there because he's not looking for a sound bite or a hot take or more Twitter followers. He acts out of compassion for his people. So the prophetic statement is followed by telling the good news, by sharing a meal, and by helping those that gather around him. In this, Jesus is providing an alternative way to act, to resist political oppression or corruption by performing actions of goodness and healing. Now, a condemnation of our leaders that act in their own self-interest, that lie or create policies that harm people or places, is only part of the prophetic work of our faith. And when we get stuck reading the latest story spun to our own political leanings, we steep in the mire and muck. And if we are focused only on our party winning or our favorite issue of choice taking the center stage, we can become disgruntled or disgusted or apathetic. can get burnt out by it all. We can feel the physical and mental stress compounding in our bodies. Whether the actions of our politicians affect us directly or not. Because our imperfect system doesn't have compassion and care at its core. But our faith does. Our faith calls us to imagine ideas, projects, and solutions to life's most challenging problem. How do we take care of the people and places around us? And strong faith communities offer opportunities, glimpses of a better world, where the hungry are fed, the sick are healed, the captives are released, and the dead are raised. As we read the paper this week or watch the news, as we check our favorite news apps or read about the latest political kerfuffle or whatever. Let's try a project this week. When you feel the stress mounting in your shoulder blades, ask, is there something I can do? No matter how small, to offer a glimpse of a better world, to show compassion and care for the people and places around me. The feeling of compassion is a great way to fight burnout, especially in difficult times. May the fire of compassion burn in the